Welcome, and thank you for standing by. All lines will be open and interactive for today's conference call. If you do have a mute button that you could utilize to keep down background noise when not speaking. As a reminder, the call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Now I'll turn your meeting over to Ms. Lisa Marrugaskas. Ma'am, you may begin.
Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Marrugaskas from Johns Hopkins Hospital. I am the hospital epidemiologist here and may have spoken with some of you on our previous call. Thank you very much for joining us today. I wanted an opportunity to touch base now that the project is moving into the surgical site infection phase and to make sure that we are all on the same page for measurement. The one call that we've had so far that was several months ago gave me the impression that the participating facilities are using the NHSN definitions, and it sounded like at that time that we were all sort of on the same page. All of the lines are open, so I want this to be fairly informal and just a dialogue. I don't have slides, but I just wanted to throw a few questions out there and make sure that you get your questions answered about surgical site infection surveillance as it pertains to this study and to see the current state of denominators, numerators, and those kinds of things. Does that sound okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Terrific. Is there anyone on the call that was not on the previous infection prevention call, the IP call?
This is Linda Formby at the Medical University of South Carolina. Bernadette Gary and I are on the call today, and we were not on the previous call.
Okay, fantastic. Well, I just does everything in my little intro apply to you as well? I guess I just my general question of trying to
we participate in public reporting here in the state of South Carolina, and CABG procedures are one of the procedures that we are required to report into NHSN as part of South Carolina public reporting. So, yes, it does apply. We use the NHSN definition.
Fantastic.
I have a question. Are we going to follow any other surgical procedures other than the CABG?
Great question. So I think the answer is no.
Okay.
We have discussed whether or not to include valve surgeries or any other cardiothoracic surgeries. Our feeling was, and please chime in if you have a different opinion about this, but our feeling was that most facilities, as you just mentioned, are doing CABG surveillance, but that it would be more difficult to find unanimity about whether everyone was doing valves and other procedures.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a general sense that that is true, or does anyone have any kind of comments about that?
This is Teresa Shields from the University of Michigan,
uh-huh.
And we have a very our volume of isolated CABG is very low. We have higher volume of valve surgery.
Okay.
So
you are doing surveillance for valve surgery?
I think my infection control people, are they on the line? Lisa, are you on the line? And Melissa? I was waiting for the infection control people. Yes, we do surveillance. We do.
Okay.
And I'm the study coordinator at the site, but we do high volume of aneurysms and valves, very low CABG volume.
Okay. So we're
part of the Michigan, we're the Keystone Project, too, so we collect data for that. And
okay. So it sounds like you would, because of your volumes, you would prefer that be included.
Correct.
And you are doing existing surveillance.
Yes.
This is Barbara Smith from St. Luke's in Manhattan. We're mandated to collect CABG, but we also collect the valves because we've been doing it longstanding. But our overall volume is much smaller than some of your other sites, so we could do both, or we could do just the CABG, whatever your team wants. My only concern is then I can't distinguish on my central line days which ones are CABG patients and which one are central line patients. So those central line days will be both types of open heart patients.
Oh, that's fine. Yes, I don't want this to, if we choose to go with just CABG, that will not affect the fact that you would still be looking at your whole cohort for the CLABSIs, because we do.
Okay, that's fine then.
Yeah, we do recognize that it would be next to impossible and a huge burden to separate.
This is Deb Fry from Lehigh Valley Hospital in Allentown, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
We collect both, report both to NHSN, so it wouldn't be a problem for us to have both valves and CABGs included.
Okay.
This is Linda again from the Medical University of South Carolina. We do not collect data on valves. Currently, we only do CABG, and with additional pending CMS requirements, we would prefer not to collect the valves.
And this is Rita Smith from Suburban, and we do core measures. We collect data on CABGs and valves.
Okay.
Star 6 to open the line.
Aren't all the lines open?
I think all the lines are open.
Okay. University of Michigan just called in.
This is Bethesda North, now that we have the correct number and passcode.
Hi, Bethesda North.
Hi. This is Lisa Maragakis at Hopkins. We're just discussing, our first topic was the scope of the SSI surveillance and whether it would be only CABG or whether it would include other cardiothoracic procedures. I was saying that we were leaning towards doing only CABG because we thought that everyone would do that surveillance and didn't want to add any burden. And basically, we've just gone through, and it sounds like almost everyone is doing CABG and valves, a few people not. And so that we were sort of taking a poll about that.
Bethesda North does both CABGs and cardiac surgeries.
UT Southwestern does CABGs and cardiac surgeries.
Bay State does both as well.
University of Michigan does both.
Okay. And when you say cardiac surgery, you're defining it as the NHSN?
Correct.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
No, U of M, we don't use the NHSN codes for our CABG surveillance. We just do all cardiac surgeries, and then we split it out by procedure type, you know, valve, heart transplant, CABG plus valve, root, aortic root. We split it six ways to Sunday, but not NHSN ways.
Ah, I see.
Yeah, we have to be complicated about it.
Now, would you have the ICD-9 code, access to the ICD-9 codes to put them back in the categories if we wanted to do that?
Yeah, we can do that. We have the capability because we have to do it for the mandatory colons and hysterectomies, and we submit other surgeries to NHSN, so we can do it.
Okay. All right, well, I'm going to take this information back. It's actually sounding like there's a lot more comprehensive cardiac surgery surveillance than we had anticipated. And so I think we will relook at this and get back to the group about the scope. Please don't get nervous, though, the institutions that are not currently doing valves, because I think we can probably accommodate that and at least break it apart so that we have CABG for everyone and then potentially include the other procedures for those that have the data. But I'll have to discuss that with some of the other investigators and make sure that we are all on the same page.
Okay.
To drill down just a little bit further for CABG, one question that we had was if everyone is collecting data about chest incision versus leg incision or that primary versus secondary incision variable.
Bethesda North does.
Bay State does.
U of M does.
St. Luke's does.
Lehigh Valley Hospital does.
Does
both. MUSC does.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is there anybody who's not or who would have trouble telling us if it was a chest or leg?
UC Southwestern does.
Okay, terrific. All right. So I think those were my main two questions. Does anyone have other questions? I have reassured the leaders of this project from the beginning that, you know, you're all big centers. You're all using the NHSN definitions. They want very much for us to all be on the same page with this. And my impression is that we are, and this is certainly reinforcing that with mandated public reporting in so many places that NHSN is the kind of standard way that we're all collecting these data. Are there any questions about denominators or any of the intricacies of the surveillance that you feel we need to go over?
Well, nothing with denominators, but at U of M, we've always tossed around the mediastinitis definition versus deep wounds, and it might behoove everyone to kind of have a consensus agreement about calling what is what, so to speak, kind of a little educational module or something, so everybody's on the same page. If sites are going to be broken down to that level, the data.
This is Dick Engelman at Bay State. You do have a real issue. What you've just addressed, basically, is how to define mediastinitis versus, say, a sternal infection. And I think it does get into semantics to a degree. But I would think if you're dealing with infection that is down to the bone, we would be, and not involving bone, it is still not a superficial infection, and that I would term deep. And anything that involves bone or organ structure below bone should, I think, be defined as a mediastinal infection. It gets into semantics, however, and I don't know what the group would feel.
Well, I thought we were looking at just calling them superficial, deep, and then organ space. So mediastinitis more or less would be included in the big group of just organ space infections.
Yeah, there's no question that's true. But what would, suppose it were the sternum that was involved.
Yeah, if we just had those.
Deep to the sternum. What would you term that?
I'm sorry.
This is Mary Ellen from Bay State. There's actually NHSN criteria for that. So for those of us who are doing mandatory reporting, you have two choices with cardiac surgical patients. Is it mediastinitis with an unstable sternum, or is it osteomyelitis? And so it goes back to the 2008 APIC, that's where it was published, NHSN criteria for if you're going to use organ space, you have to be able to put it into one of those categories. So you have your superficial, that's explained. You have your deep, which can go up to but not include the bone. And then when you're talking about mediastinitis, osteomyelitis, CARD if it develops, pericarditis, I mean, are we going to be consistent with NHSN reporting, or are we going to develop something specific for this group?
Can you stay with NHSN?
I think that's what the general consensus is to stay with NHSN criteria. So, Mary Ellen, so you've defined it separately as osteomyelitis, which would be sternal, and if the organ space below that is not involved, it would be simply defined as osteo.
Well, there's in NHSN, there's criteria for mediastinitis, and there's criteria for osteomyelitis. So if it's mediastinitis and meets that criteria, then that's what it would be reported as. And part of that is instability, and I can actually read it to you guys if you need me to, or send it out if you needed that.
What's the date on that, Marianne? Because I might have an old sheet.
2008, and it's still the consistent one that they're using. June 2008. So, again, if you want me to send that to the group, I could certainly do that.
I think that would be helpful.
Okay.
You can always get it on the NHSN website.
Yep.
And their library and resources, the current definitions are always included there. Because sometimes the printed ones, well, it wouldn't have anything to do with SSIs, but, you know, like BSIs and CAUDIs have changed through the years, so from when they published. But the most recent is always found on the NHSN site.
Yeah, I just Googled it. I'm there.
And August 18th, when they had their most recent newsletter that came out, they included a copy of the June 2008 AJIC article that referred to that. because they gave additional criteria for SSIs on that. For those of you who haven't seen it, it includes things like staples, and this doesn't have anything to do with cardiac surgery, and I know that's why we're on the call, but there's additional details that they provided in the August 18th newsletter, and that's attached to it, what we're talking about. So unless I hear otherwise, I guess you'll be all right, and I don't need to send it forward.
Yeah, I think we're good. We got it. Thanks, Marianne.
Okay.
Now that you've mentioned staples, I guess that brings up the other issue, which is, you know, most of these procedures are going to involve implants, and so, you know, as such, would be eligible to have an SSI diagnosed up to a year after the procedure. What are people doing in terms of surveillance, timing of surveillance, and going back and checking at a year or not?
Well, a year, because the majority of them have sternal wires. Is that not correct? Unless for some reason you've done a valve through a thoracotomy incision, and that, again, would be a valve, so that's an implant too. So they're tracked for a year.
Yeah, I agree.
Everything's a year.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Let me just be clear. I understand that they should be tracked for a year. I just wondered, in terms of the implementation of your surveillance, so you're probably looking at closer than a year, so after that 30-day period so that you can report your rates, then do you look again at a year, or do you all have...
We do
we
continuous
the year
surveillance
after the date of the
surgery at MUSC. I keep the rosters and go back and follow up, and then after a year I drop off their rosters.
At Bay State, I mean, it's continual. If a patient is readmitted because obviously someone with mediastinitis or even if they're seen through the physician's office, I mean, we continue to track. And if we're looking at an infection and it's greater than a year, that's when we discount it. But anything during that time period is evaluated.
That's how we roll at U of M.
Right. And technically, it's only beyond 30 days is a deep process. So,
right.
So that... They're almost all readmitted, and even in Pennsylvania, if you're readmitted to another hospital, you are responsible for contacting that original facility who performed that procedure to inform them of the admission.
Well, and Joint Commission requires that anyway to
right.
be happening.
Yeah.
Yep, we're all good on that.
Yeah, I think we're capturing them all. I think you can feel confident of that.
Oh, yeah.
Terrific. Okay, other issues that you think we need to discuss to make sure that we're all on the same page for measuring this?
What about the issue of diagnosing capture of superficial infections?
Well, it's all required to be reported through NHSN, whether it's superficial, deep, or organ space. So it's within this collaborative, or I don't know if that's what you're calling it, but what you plan on reporting out through that. But for those of us that are doing mandatory reporting or any kind of NHSN reporting on CBGBs or CBGCs, we have to do the superficial as well.
But were you talking about methods of surveillance, so maybe post-discharge surveillance?
Right. In particular, the post-discharge at less than 30 days.
My mechanism is that I have a connection with the physician's assistant and the nurse practitioner that sees them in the 3-week post-op period. So, it's like any surveillance project. You may miss a few, but that's not the norm. The norm is that you're going to eye-catch them.
They say we have about 5 different ways that we're doing post-op surveillance. One of them is a post-discharge questionnaire, which goes to the physician's office, and they report on patients who are seen in the office. So those would be capture the superficial. We also do readmission, re-op, our culture reports. I mean, there's a number of different ways to track this. So what's the question specifically about superficial infections?
Yeah, the issue would be, let's say, discharged post-op day 5-7, seen in physician's office, a week or two later. Either they meet the criteria for superficial infection, however, physician just either opens it up, cleans it out, possibly gives antibiotics, but that's not captured.
That's actually, when you said the physician opens it up, you're already bumped into a second criteria where a physician deliberately opens the surgical wound. And so, but anyway, I think it's a part of it is making sure that you're getting the accurate information from wherever the patient is seen post-op, whether it's the emergency department, at the physician's office, or ends up getting seen at another hospital. So,
right. Yeah. My question was just what are people's general perception on
Are they truly capturing this, or is their current incidence likely underreported, which is kind of a general concern?
We feel pretty confident at U of M. We're capturing, like one of the other gals mentioned, we have connections in the clinics. We get emails from our surgeons. We also have an electronic medical record system, and we have, if we wanted to really get into it, all of our patients come back to the U of M clinics, which we have access to all through the EMR, and we can actually, like, Google the EMR looking for keywords. The infections like cellulitis or open the wound or whatever, so we can snag people through electronic chart review. And we also have an electronic infection control system called Theradoc, which snags any patient that readmits. There's a trigger set up where it'll fire an alert to us.
What hospital are you from?
University of Michigan.
Yeah, we've just gotten Theradoc here at Southwestern, and I guess my concern was more the clinic. And
yeah.
So I think we have a little work to do that way. Because I don't know. I think that's probably underreported here. I'm just curious if others had a similar concern.
Yeah.
I only have two surgeons, so it's pretty easy for me. I mean, I think people that have a lot of surgeons might have more trouble. But
sure.
Right.
I think it definitely depends on your setting and where people are likely to get their follow-up and whether your center has access to those outpatient records. Yeah.
Yeah, big time.
I know for our state, but probably for the other states that have mandatory, we get audited as well. So, you know, the state person comes in to see if we're not. So.
We were just audited at MUSC this week by the state.
That's always fun.
It would be ideal if the surgeons would be incentivized to report it, but I'm not sure that that's necessarily...
Oh, incentivized, yeah, that might, well, I think they're being incentivized not to have them.
Yeah, that's concerning.
Let me ask another question about just timing of data. There is such a lag inherent in doing SSI surveillance. Sometimes, obviously, it's... surveillance has to occur for enough period of time after the last procedure of the period. Sometimes there's also a delay in getting denominator coding data and that kind of thing. How long does it take at each center to be able to feel comfortable reporting a rate, recognizing that that rate may change as the year progresses?
Are we reporting by month or by quarter?
By quarter.
Oh, that'd be okay.
You're right. Yeah, that's reasonable.
Is that how you usually do it?
No, we do it monthly.
Monthly.
We don't. We do it quarterly.
Yeah, we do it monthly as well, but we combine things. We can combine and give a quarterly report. The other question I have about reporting is when I went to the face-to-face meeting there at Johns Hopkins and they were talking about the computer system, they indicated that the months would be closed out after 6 months. So you couldn't add data. And I asked them, what were we going to do about the SSI monitoring because we were supposed to monitor for a year. Do you have any other clarification on that? Because if it's shut down, you can't add any data after 6 months, then you're going to miss 6 months' worth of surveillance.
We asked that same question here at MUSC.
I don't have any clarification, but I'm certainly writing it down, and I will get some because that can't happen.
And that's why I tried to explain to them. Then you can't say you're doing SSI surveillance if you're not allowing us to go back. Say we find an infection 9 months later, it's not going to get added to the database even though we have it.
Right. No, you're absolutely right.
Can I make a comment about the lag time thing?
Sure.
A question. So at our institution, for us to get the coded charts, our coders won't start coding until the patient is discharged. So we currently pull codes and do NHSN for colons. So, for example, we just received the codes for our denominators for the rest of June 2011 and the start of July. So our lag time is 3 months of just getting our denominators. Of course, we're always doing surveillance, but we can't pound out a rate until we get that denominator. So I don't know about others, but it might be a coding thing here. We're always behind with coding.
We get our denominator data from our surgical services software called POPS.
Yeah. We use ORMIS, and it doesn't have ICD-9 codes in it.
Well, ours doesn't either. What we have done is match the ICD-9 codes with the CPT codes as best we can, but we also get a ICD-9 code list in a more timely fashion, it seems, than what you're getting, and then we, you know, marry the two lists to make sure
we
don't get anybody out.
This is Kathleen. I've been working with the group trying to get them to understand that it takes longer than a year sometimes to have the full data for a specific month or a specific quarter. And we haven't come up with a way to do it yet because they want to have a six-month closeout on everything else. However, I'm not going to let them get away with it.
Thank you.
Because I know better.
Thank you, Kathleen. You heard that. Were you on when the question came about closing out the data?
Yes.
Okay. Perfect. So we'll work on that and make sure that that cannot be applicable to the SSI.
Yep.
To the person that was talking about the three-month coding delay, you know, I think this is going to be variable at different institutions, but can always be a problem. At your institution, do the cardiac surgeons participate in STS?
Yes. Yes, they do.
Oh, okay. I was just going to mention that we've had some success because we have trouble here as well with some delays. And so we've had some success combining those using essentially both denominators.
Hi. How are you doing?
Pretty good.
And
hello, Tommy.
And getting the there's a lot of noise. Getting the denominator from the cardiac surgeon from that STS in a more timely fashion so we can do our surveillance, and then sort of on the back end when the coding data comes, cross-referencing those and taking care of any discrepancies. So it's just a thought.
Okay. We do get, it's funny you mentioned that, we do get an Excel file every month from the cardiac office, probably because of the STS stuff, and it lists every cardiac surgery they do, and that's how we currently splice and dice and do our infection rates, but it's not coded. And, of course, we can do, like, that cross-reference table. It just won't be, you know, spot on.
But, right.
Yeah, we can kind of do like a bridge, and then when we get the final code report, rectify the list. Thank you.
Okay, do others have other thoughts for issues that we should discuss?
I just have a question going back to the primary and secondary incisions. Are we going to break them out as chest only and chest and legs, or keep them all in one bunch?
When you say break them out, you mean report them, like, according to NHSN, whether they're the CBGBs or the CBGCs?
Yes, exactly.
I think ideally we would like to follow that if everyone is collecting the data in that way, that we would want the data to be structured like that.
Okay.
And then within that CBGB category to know if it was a leg or a chest infection or both. Other topics to propose discussion?
Is the plan to do SIRs on the data?
Well, please say no.
great question. Kathleen, do you have any words of wisdom about the data analysis plan? Kathleen, she hung up on me.
Another question.
Right. So as far as I'm concerned right now, our plan is to continue with doing rates and you know, benchmarks. Has anyone switched at this point to SIR, or is everyone yeah. still?
Not for cardiac, but we do it for other procedures.
For other procedures.
It's
Lisa, I'm sorry, I couldn't get my phone unmuted.
That's okay.
We're doing rates.
Okay, good.
Rates. Okay.
Right. I was going to say, I don't think the physicians can wrap their head around SIRs yet.
I agree.
So are you guys using, like, the legacy benchmarks from NHSN?
Yes.
So
the
far.
Next benchmarks?
Yeah.
Yes, we're using, I think the last report out for the procedural rates was the 2009 report.
So eventually, you know, as time goes on, they're not publishing those anymore,
right.
So your benchmark is going to become antique.
Right. Well, we're benchmarking against the 10th percentile, which is zero, so I don't think that would change much.
Right.
Where can't you be zero.
Star at MUSC.
And we also use those at MUSC for surgeon-specific rates. So they get an SIR for their surgeon-specific rate, and then periodically, like Bernadette just said, we do the SIR for the overall.
Well, that's good. That's cool.
Okay, well, this has been terrific. And we've talked about the definitions. We've talked about superficial, deep, and those issues. We've talked about implants and the duration of surveillance, some about the methods of surveillance, the details about legs versus chest and getting denominators. We've talked about some of the ways that we might deal with the coding delays. But it really sounds like that this data collection is going to be what you're already doing. Oh, Kathleen, I think before you joined the call, we were talking about quarterly versus monthly. I thought we were going to do this by quarter, but do you have any other information about monthly or?
As usual. And this is more of a Q&A, which I shouldn't really.
Kathleen? Maybe unmute again. I'll check on that if she has had to leave our call. And then Kathleen is going to help us, and I will work with her as well to make sure that we solve this problem about closing out the data. Other questions or concerns about the SSI surveillance? Oh, and I'm sorry, the final thing is that I'm going to take back to the group the fact that so many of you are doing valves and other procedures, and we will revisit our decision to only do CABG and talk about how we can deal with the other data.
Do you have most of us on the phone call, do you think?
Well, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Looks like we have 8 or 9 sites, and so it probably would be worth polling all the rest so that we get
maybe just send like a little email out.
Good idea.
Lisa?
Oh, hi.
This time when I tried to unmute, I managed to hang up. I apologize.
Oh. Okay.
My phone and I are having issues. We are planning on monthly. Is it I know that some of you said that you do this quarterly. Is it possible to give us data for monthly rates?
And my problem with the monthly rate is that for my hospital anyway, that the denominator is so small, it's not really going to, I need the quarter to make it anything significant. But we can certainly do it. I mean, we collect it monthly, so we can certainly do it. It's just...
Good point.
But many other sites have many more surgeries than I'm doing, so...
What are other thoughts about quarterly versus monthly?
A Suburban calculates or does surveillance monthly, so I'm okay with it either way, whatever the group wants to do.
Lehigh Valley Hospital has to submit monthly to NHSN, so we're doing it monthly already, so that doesn't matter for us.
Yeah, same here, U of M, monthly.
Same here at MUSC.
Bethesda North does monthly as well, and we also break ours out into the risk categories, so I don't know if others are doing the same.
Mm-hmm. Bay State the same monthly through NHSN, including, as you say, the risk categories.
This is MUSC. If we add valves, which we're not currently reviewing now, we might prefer quarterly.
Yeah, so are we? If we're talking just straight CABG, like plain old CABG without any complicated additions to it, we don't, at U of M, we only do about a dozen of those a month. But most of our CABGs are accompanied by a root or a valve or something else. So we're just pulling pure CABG. We'll have low denoms too.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't, we collect the data regardless, so we're happy to send it monthly if we send it.
Okay, well, let's when we send out this poll, make sure, you know, to make sure that we get the data from the other, I mean, we get the information from the other site, we'll include this as well and pursue this a little further before we make a final decision.
And we're just looking at, like, a statistic. We're not looking at any organisms in this project, correct?
That's a great question. I don't think that we had any current plans to look at organisms.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. Let's keep it that way.
Hey, Lisa, do you have any idea what type of template is going to look like for us to submit information? Like, how, is there going to be procedural demographics that we're going to be submitting like we do for NHSN, or are we strictly just doing numerator, denominator, and it's going to calculate a rate?
This is Mary Ellen from Bay State. I don't know if you've talked about this on other calls in relation to the CLABSI data and stuff, but has there been a discussion about setting up a user group and granting access to NHSN for this group to get the information that we already submit in one way so we don't have to do this another time?
That would be great.
That would be fabulous.
Idea. App, SSI, any of the things that you're
asking. Sure. CLABS, right.
Yeah.
It's all in there. For Lehigh Valley Hospital, it is.
Yeah, for Bay State, too. So it's just, I mean, think about it. You'd get your data in real time. Someone wouldn't have to sit down and do it again and again.
We ask about that early on. This is MUSC, because we realize we put the data already into NHSN. Perhaps it could just be pulled.
Having this group set up, a user group through the CDC, through NHSN, and then we all confer rights. And then you'd get everything, including, because in NHSN you have to put in your organisms with your susceptibilities, all the kind of stuff that generates more work for the data entry person for this project.
I absolutely love that suggestion. I am not in charge of the data collection, but I will take it back. So I can't answer the question. I'm waiting to see if Kathleen jumps back in or hangs
we
up.
We love it, too. It sounded like some other people.
But we did bring that up in the beginning, and there was some reason it didn't happen. Maybe they just didn't understand what we were trying to tell them.
I see. Well, I will certainly pursue it again, because it definitely makes the most sense when we're talking about all of these things that are already being reported. So let me readdress that with them.
It would just require NHSN agreeing to, as long as we sign, like you said, conferring rights and a data use agreement, it would just be getting NHSN on board to somehow spool the data or you intercept the data or something.
Well, yeah, they have to extract it. I know through our state reporting.
Same here.
Yeah, when I confer rights, it's to the Massachusetts Department of Public Health, and they pull the data out, and then they, you know,
right,
manipulate it however they want it.
And it's behind the scenes, so it's not additional workload.
We love that.
Yeah. Yeah, we do.
So Kathleen just emailed me and said she can't go back on the call for some reason, but hang up.
Afternoon.
I understand that.
But I definitely will take this forward. I don't know what the limitations are, if any, but I know we do that in Maryland as well. So that would be the simplest and the most, certainly take the burden of data reporting off that way.
I missed yesterday's call, so when is the timeline that we're expected to start this, Lisa?
I was on yesterday's call, and I don't think we said exactly when it was starting.
I thought they were going to try, they initially were going to try starting in October, but I think they found out that they weren't going to be able to, but they wanted to maybe get it done by November or so because they were planning on doing VAPS after December.
In January or so, yeah. So I know it's coming in the next several months, but I don't think
October. Are we going to use the same baselines like we did for the CLABS?
The same, what do you mean by the
like
same
we did, we had year one was like 2000, you know, May or June 1st of 2009 to May 31st of June 2010. And then year two as a baseline was, this isn't sounding familiar?
I think this is going to be a different baseline than the CLABSI. I, I will check on that too, but I think that it's a for each measure, there's going to be a, you know, the baseline period that's appropriate for when it got rolled out.
Okay, so if you would check on that, that'd be great. Thank you.
Yeah, I will.
Also, because most of us tend to do something on an annual basis, like January to December, and not, you know, June to June, which
right.
Made me at least have to go and recalculate, which was not hard, just inconvenient.
Right.
So it would be easier if you pick a calendar year, for me at least, and I suspect most people, because most people report on a calendar year, not on a school year.
Is anybody doing fiscal year?
No, we do calendar year as well. I think that's because the CDC does calendar year.
Maybe because our country is a calendar. except for the financial world.
Except for the CFOs.
Exactly.
Yeah, except for the CFOs, exactly.
We finally got ours to change so that we didn't have to cut it different ways for the financial, administrative meetings. All right. Well, this is terrific. I have a lot of answers to get. I have down that I'm going to talk to them about the quarterly versus monthly. Most importantly, whether we can pull the data directly from NHSN through a data use agreement and a user group. We'll plan on polling the other sites on some of the questions we've talked about, clarify this baseline period, when it will be and when the start is. I think those are the main things.
Fantastic.
Well,
thank you.
This has been tremendously helpful to us from a design standpoint, and I hope to you to know that everybody is on the same page. And sorry that I can't answer all of the questions right now, but I will definitely make sure that we do and that we get all the information to you.
Thank you.
Thank
all
you.
Right, sounds good.
Thank you.
Thank you.